Welcome to Label Sessions Presents, the podcast where we talk to the most interesting people about all the things that you need to know in the world of innovation, business, design, tech, and culture. I'm Josh Nixon, the team's content producer, joining you live from Edinburgh, Scotland. And I'll take us straight into some of the content that we've got coming through the Label Sessions pipeline. So the current accelerators that we're doing, we're continuing our batch of Label Mate accelerators, which includes the Sonic Branding Accelerator with music maestro Vincent Corver, Consumer Duty with Ravi Bala, and Cyber Innovation with Jez Goldstone. There's plenty more that's coming down, ranging from accelerators in responsible innovation to procurement and functional features, as well as more. I'm then joined by Maxine Mackey, co-founder of Label Sessions, also here in Edinburgh with me. Max, I'd love for you just to walk us through some of the topics that we're going to cover this week.
Sure thing. Well, firstly, I'm thrilled to be talking to the three of you today, Tim and Walter. In particular, when we talk about change, I think what really surfaced for me is how much of at the core it's a people activity. And I'm hoping there'll be some themes around that for the four things that we'll talk about today. So the first one is really about the future of retail space. So Starbucks have announced that they're doubling down on this concept of being a third space. So this third space between work and home. And I think from that, like, big questions arise around what kinds of spaces and uses emerge from this and who are the winners and losers here. So I think this idea of the third space for a big retailer is really curious. The second thing is Sonic branding. So Magnum have just launched a new Sonic identity, which has been, I think, in the business media, hugely celebrated. And it builds on this positive associations that people have when they're biting into a Magnum ice cream. Very specifically, for Magnum on this one, it's the crack of chocolate. So we'll explore, I think, why sound is so powerful for brands. And I think that's really interesting for Magnum in particular, finding their USP, this cracking sound. Next one is really around winners and losers in innovation. So Skype, which is quite like a ubiquitous for like video calling and free video calling, I should say, has been sunset by Microsoft. So this kind of, I think, brings into question what we all remember from it as a platform. I'm sure we have our own memories of Skype. And then if we think about the big picture, are they an innovator or a loser from the pandemic that just maybe didn't adapt? I'm not sure, but I think Skype being sunset is an interesting one for us to talk about. And then lastly, our final topic is family banking. So MasterCard are partnering with Lightcard. So they're based in the Middle East and it's to creating a new family banking proposition. And for us, I think today we'll explore what the future of family banking is.
Brilliant. And as Maxine let slip there, we're joined by two brand new label mates from our growing global roster. So first we have Walter Seepersad. Thank you so much for joining us, Walter. Walter is a business transformation and strategy execution expert with a career spanning some of the world's biggest tech and financial firms, including JP Morgan, Deloitte, and ServiceNow. Walter, I'd love for you just to tell me a little bit about what it is that's exciting you right now in your area of work.
You know, I think it's two things, and I started writing some articles on LinkedIn on it, right? I think the first thing is, and they both go hand in hand. One is I'm fascinated by the way companies talk about change versus how they actually execute it. And there was a coach I met last year, and I was using the word innovative in one of my pitches. And he was like, ooh, are they creating something new? What does the word innovative actually mean? Everyone throws that word around. And you sit down and you think about it, it's like, okay, are you creating something new? Or is it just innovative to your group, right? And so that had me thinking. And so then I'm like, okay, there's the people side of transformation, which we sort of touched on as well too. And I'm like, okay, if I think about the human side of transformation, how are leaders and teams adapting to that change, right? We're so focused on tools and methodologies, but at the heart of every transformation is people. So then are you really being innovative? And then are you considering people or are you focusing on tools and methodologies? And so just to sort of sum it up, right? When I think about change in general, and generative AI is the biggest one that's the new kid on the block, right? So, you know, it's the way we lead, the way we communicate and support change either makes or breaks our successes. And so that's kind of the top of mind things for me right now and some of the things I've been writing about on LinkedIn. Back to you, Josh.
Thank you. Handing it back to the news report, I love it. So next up we have Tim Moringa. Tim is a change management expert, leadership strategist, and sustainability advocate with a passion for helping organizations navigate transformation with impact and longevity. He's the founder of Hive 17, specializing in team development, organizational change, and embedding sustainability into corporate culture. So, Tim, I'd love to turn the question to you. What is it that's sort of exciting you right now in your area of work?
I mean, there's something which I've been absorbing, something I've been observing in maybe in the last maybe year or two, and it comes around with that well-being trend which is coming up, and I feel that it just maybe makes me excited about, and I'll tell you what makes me excited about it, because with 517 we are looking at creating highly effective senior leadership teams and working with the senior leaders. And what is interesting, I mean, everybody says that the higher you go up in the hierarchy, the colder it gets. And then when you look at team effectiveness methodology, that is a very, very strong indicator that you're a very, I mean, that you're not an effective team. And that means actually that the senior leadership teams have a huge need to become highly effective teams, and that's being slowly being recognized. I mean, also in the context of, for example, we want to avoid toxic leadership, and that's actually something when you look at some of the literature, this is really the coming not even from the CXOs, it's coming from the board members. I mean they're going really, really high up. So that's really something which is recognized on a field where we need to do something. Actually, it's very difficult if you are a highly effective team, it's very difficult to become toxic, for example. So that's why the topic is so interesting. And so we want to create highly effective senior leadership teams, and we want to create with these highly effective senior leadership teams, we want to create healthy organizations. And healthy organization means, from an organizational perspective, that this is a cohesive leadership team, and it's a leadership team that creates clarity on where the organization wants to go. But it also means for me that we need healthy people in this organization. And that is actually the link to this, that's the link to well-being, for example. And when you look at highly effective teams, one of the key ingredient is we need to have fun and really have a great time together. Otherwise, we're not highly effective. And these are all elements where you say we want to actually help the people, help the team members to feel good and where they are, not being stressed and not being pushed forward, but like just having a fantastic, great time, and everything fits into place. And that goes along with what a lot of people talk about with well-being. We want to create well-being. And the reason why I now feel that I'm in a great space, because I found a way that we can say, yes, we have fantastic well-being. But yeah, we want to create a successful company. But I'm saying, yes, but it's totally linked. If people have a great time, if people have clarity, if people trust each other, they will create a successful outcome for the organization. And then they will create, I mean, and some of these outcomes are higher retention rates, higher innovation, higher productivity. And who doesn't want that? And I think that's why I feel I'm in the right space, because I found that magic ingredient to actually make companies successful based on great people and great teams. Back to you.
Thank you. Thank you. That really does sound magic, Tim. Thank you so much. That kicks us off with our first topic then that Max really tipped us on to there. So Starbucks have announced that they're doubling down on the concept of being a third space between work and home. And people are saying more than ever that working from home, people more than ever are working from home now than ever. But we can really work from anywhere, as we've proven. And from that comes, are there really opportunities to create new kinds of spaces, new kinds of coffee shop, for example, co-working space? What kinds of new space could emerge from that? And what do we need to emerge if we're going to make remote working work?
Maybe I could jump in. It was something that Tim just said around well-being and joy at work and teams being more effective when they're happier. To me, I think there's this kind of an interesting space around hybrid working cultures. And this, I think what Starbucks are doing is saying, we want to be a place that you linger. You're not just here for a takeaway coffee in and out. I think that's really what they're saying. It's all around lingering and using the space. And I think that's really interesting, especially when we think about work is an activity. It's not necessarily a place that you go to. I'm sure all of us and many of our listeners are used to hybrid working and will have kind of a pros and cons for both. And for me, I think for Starbucks having this concept of this third space, it's actually trying to do a few different things. So they're practically, they're having more tables so people can sit, more plugs so people can work. I don't think they necessarily have to work in the Starbucks, but they can linger. And whether that's kind of a meetups, whatever people are doing, that's up to them. I think that's really curious. And they're not the only brands that do this. Like Apple, for example, very much, I think, treat their retail stores as an experience. So we probably are all familiar with how uniform that design is around the world. That's highly engineered, I think probably highly expensive, but they all look the same. I think that's quite curious. Again, they give you free Wi-Fi because they want you to stay. I think that's curious.
So when I saw the topic, I was thinking back. So before the pandemic, didn't Starbucks used to play music when you go to visit them? And then you'd have the, like, do you remember the little cards with like, here's the playlist in case you like the music they were playing?
Oh, I've never seen that.
So when I was thinking about this, I was like, wait a minute, didn't they used to do this back in the day? Like, you know, it's almost like they kind of lost their way a little bit and then are sort of coming back because of profits or whatever, right? But let me tell you why this resonates with me. So before the pandemic, you know, you spend all your time behind a desk in meetings. And back then, I remember, if I had a remote meeting one-on-one, I would do what I call a walk-in 101. Or sometimes if in the office, if you happen to work for a large tech company, sorry, or a large company, and they have their own cafe inside, it's like, hey, let's go to the cafe and grab coffee, right? So I really like this. But here's the thing, right? I don't know if Starbucks is truly reimagining the third space or just putting a label on an old idea. Because when I went to my Starbucks the other day, it was challenging to get Wi-Fi, the seats weren't comfortable, you know. So I'm like, okay, maybe it didn't reach my Starbucks as yet, right? But, you know, third space, love it. But let's approach it from the right perspective. The same thing we say as change agents, right? What is the ROI? What's your motivation for doing this? Tim, I don't know if you have any thoughts.
I mean, similar to you, Walter, that topic really, really resonates with me, and I can't come to that better as well. And it actually goes very way before the pandemic. I mean, sometimes I think the pandemic, we forgot some of the things which happened before the pandemic, but the main reason why it so resonates with me, sometimes my friends say I'm ahead of time, and in this topic, I was really ahead of time. So in 2006, I opened a coffee shop in Shanghai. And the concept was that people can buy a membership and use this office use the coffee shop as their workspace. I mean, at that time, I was way ahead of time because it didn't work out. But I was really ahead of time. And I think, but it's interestingly now when I and similar, Walter, what you said as well. I mean, I don't like to sit in my office. So before the pandemic, when I was still having my corporate job, I just took sometimes half a day or a couple of hours and went downstairs into a coffee shop nearby. It wasn't Starbucks at that time. It wasn't Starbucks, which was nearby. Or there was actually Starbucks nearby, but I preferred to go to another one and just sit there for a while and work from there. And it was just a little bit of different thing. So what I really feel is, and there's different aspects to it, which why I really like it. I think it's all about providing options. You can work in the office. We provide office space. You can work at home if you feel comfortable. But there might be another space where you should work and where you can work, which might be good. And this is a little bit opening it up. And I think there's a lot of different, yes, if you feel, I mean, for me personally, the worst is that if I have a video call with somebody and that person sits in Starbucks, I mean, please don't go out of that Starbucks because you can't hear you because it's too noisy, right? And a noise canceling feature from your video call tool is just making me that I can't hear you. So anyway, I mean, depends on if you have calls, please don't go to Starbucks. Or this is a bit one of the things, but there might be different things you want to do, right? I mean, if you just want to work on a report or you want to work on your emails, that's maybe a very good space, but it might be totally different things. And I also see one of the things again that happened before the pandemic, that hotels started to have co-working spaces. The Swiss Club in Singapore has a co-working space. I mean, there's a lot of things, a lot of different places. Or in Singapore as well, the MRT stations, some of the MRT stations, they have co-working spaces. So it's really, really interesting. And one of the things which I feel like in the beginning with these co-working spaces, now that we know these brands, they were all in the city center. And now I see the trend that they're going out. And actually, I was actually sharing that with a company who was creating a co-working space in Singapore. You should go out and then you should talk to the government and get funding from them. Because if you can convince the companies that they maybe 1 or 2 days, I mean, now it's easy, but before the pandemic, asking a company that the employees work from home or not in the office 1 day per week is a huge thing, but now it's easier. The impact on public, on transport system is huge, right? I mean, if the government says, oh, you can work from home or in a co-working space near your home and don't commute to work in the city center, this is easily 20-40% less of traffic. And that would be huge for governments, not for companies or not for this or not for that, but for the government, right?
I was thinking back to some of the points that you mentioned, right? And even this conversation, if you approach it from a system perspective, right? Tim, you're very much into the culture and the behaviors, right? But there are other people who they're more concerned about the mindsets or the systems and structures, right? And so I can see for others where the commute isn't as long, there's also the macroeconomic things you have to think about as well too, right? Which is, you know, you don't have a thriving downtown, which creates businesses and real estate and blah, blah, blah. And it's a non-trivial topic, which I'm not going to get into. But coming back to the McDonald's one, the thing I think, sorry. Yes, why did I say McDonald's?
I don't know. You're hungry. You're hungry.
I mean, Starbucks sounds cool too, but... But, you know, the thing that I think about with Starbucks is, okay, third space, great, between home and work. And I go back to basic fundamentals when it comes to designing software, right? What persona are you doing this for? Is this for the single person that wants to get into deep thought work so doesn't want to get distractions? Is it for a group to co-locate, which could then be noisy? And I love the Lululemon example from Max, right? So it's like, I don't know. I'm not seeing Starbucks investing in huge footprints to be able to accommodate all of these types of personas. And so the thing I ask myself is this just another marketing thing where it's like, oh, look, we're going to do this. And then, okay, but for which type of persona? For what type of use case, you know? So I don't know. I love the idea. I'm skeptical when it comes to Starbucks. Actually, when I want alone time and I'm a remote worker, the library is actually a great place for me because you can still go in with food. You have all choices to deal with. Maybe Starbucks could take a lesson from the library system anyway.
Speaking of hungry, the Magnum, the ice cream brand, have launched a new sonic identity that builds upon the positive associations of just biting into the ice cream, cracking that sort of chocolate shell. Another good example is TikTok is starting to issue like a jingle to people who have been using the app for too long. So say at like 11 o'clock, it rings up and says time for bed kind of thing. Why is sounds like this so powerful for brands and product designers? And why have brand and product leaders been so reluctant to use sound in the past, do you guys think?
Yeah, I want to take this a slightly different direction. So I was researching this topic, right? Mm-hmm. And my mind went to Walt Disney World. Have you all been? To the one in Florida? Well, it doesn't have to be the one in Florida.
Hong Kong. I've been to the one in Hong Kong.
I'm Florida.
Oh, perfect. So, you know, Disney has these 4D theaters, these multi-sensory engagements, right? So the one I was thinking about was it's tough to be a bug. So not only do you have vision and it's 3D, but you also have feeling, you know, where the chairs move, and then you have scent where they, you know, when the bug sprays, you know, they spray a scent in the air, right? And I'm like, you know, I go back to, and I wrote it down somewhere. I go back to this saying about communications. So I'm just going to read it out, right? Text is powerful, but audio is richer. Audio is powerful, but video is richer. And multi-sensory experiences trumps them all. And so when I heard that crunch, and I love ice cream, and I'm like, ooh, sound as a sensory anchor, reinforcing emotional connection to their product. I loved it, right? Yeah. And they even matching their sound based on where you are in terms of location. So if you're walking through by a billboard or whatever, you know, the two actually coincides. I think that's fantastic, right? So my two piece, I love the way that they're going with this, right? Anything that can employ more senses is great. And the ad that I watched for Magnum brought a smile to my face. And what do they say about memories, right? So if you can tap into like either really happy or really sad, I don't think Magnum wants to do the really sad piece, but you know, if you could tap into a really happy memory, wow, that's marketing 101, right? So.
No, I love that. I love that. And with the senses as well. I mean, I think it's really important. And noise, noise and in general is I think something which has totally been underrated. I mean, especially living in Asia where, for example, nobody considers the acoustics in restaurants. I mean, they don't think about it. A restaurant needs to look nice, but yeah, it has nice plants in there. But yeah, putting elements into the restaurant that the noise of the people talking is getting lower, or putting music in there that it feels that the noise of the people is lower. Nobody's considering that in Asia, for example. So it's totally underrated. But as a change management practitioner, I also look in creating habits, because in the end, if you create habits, you can actually facilitate the change much, much easier. And noise is actually a very, very good trigger for creating new habits. So, I mean, that's where a little bit where the Magnum example is going on. But then on the other hand, also noise pollution. I just traveled, 15 hours in an airplane. I mean, I cannot go without my noise cancelling headset anymore, and I feel much more relaxed or not so tired than if I don't use a noise cancelling headset. So that noise is actually something which is extremely underrated, and maybe also chip in some of the things I recently read about is there's something called quiet parks. So they're certifying national parks or larger parks on their quietness. There's certain criteria, and then you get a list on quietparks.com. I don't know exactly the website. You can find a list of parks which are extremely quiet, which you can then relax as well. So there's a lot of like noisy places make you stressful. There's noise pollution, and there's a lot of the things where I see that topic has been extremely underrated. And some of the examples where noise is really considered is from car manufacturers as well. I mean, luxury brands actually testing on how the door is closing, right? They are engineering the sound the door makes when the door is closed, or they are engineering the exhaust pipe of traditional combustion engine, or the engineering the noise of electric vehicle engines, right? I mean, there's so much engineering in luxury car manufacturing on a noise level, which is actually very, very fascinating. And it's just one of the examples. But then I like to go what Walter said, and I'm one of the person, I mean, we should consider the six or more senses. I even think there's more than six senses. I mean, yes, we have technically researched and scientifically based five senses, but I'm believing in a sixth or seventh or eighth sense as well, which we just simply haven't discovered yet from a scientific perspective. But we need to employ as many senses as possible. And one of the other senses which in some areas get discovered is actually smell. And I heard of a restaurant in Singapore. They actually release the smell of of truffle fries in order that people are ordering truffle fries. And it's not from truffle fries served to tables. It's actually a smell which has been released.
On that note, Tim, estate agents would recommend that you buy kind of a fresh baked bread candle so you can burn them before people come and view your home, because the smell as an environment is so important to make people feel kind of comfortable in that space, or it's a place they want to live. I think this one's kind of a fascinating because it's a really memorable ad. And that's the thing that we're all kind of in agreement of. It's really memorable. And what's different about the Magnum one for me, and what's interesting for Sonic branding as a concept, is it's not their tagline. So Netflix has the ta-dim. You've got, we talked about McDonald's earlier. They've got, I'm loving it. I'm tone deaf, so that's about the best I'm going to get. But in my head, it sounds great. But with Magnum, it's the crack. And for me, it's like there's a couple things in that. So I think what they're trying to do is talk about like the quality. So it's thick chocolate, so it cracks. For me, it's the danger element. It's like, where's that chocolate going to go? Is it going to drop to the floor? Like, how am I going to kind of consume that? So I think there's something quite fun about it. And then we've talked all about like sound and the power of quiet as well as the power of noise. But like, I think one thing about sonic branding is that auditory cues and auditory kind of elements of a brand experience can really reduce like your cognitive load. So if we've all doom scrolled, it's really tiring after all the images one after the other. But I actually think it's the interplay of sound and image, whether it's their immersive marketing where you walk past a billboard or you walk past something and you hear a sound, there's a trigger, or it's in the kind of a funny ad itself. I think it's this way it can reduce the cognitive load. Because apart from the crack, it's quite a quiet ad, which I really like. So I think that's a lot of confidence around the Sonic brand. And I like to see when brands are doing that in a really interesting way. And Josh, I think you mentioned earlier around TikTok using sounds too to prompt behavioral changes and why UX doesn't use sound. I think UX just thinks about the visual, just doesn't really think about the sound. It's just totally deprioritized in for most kind of a digital experiences, which is sad. So it's great to see brands kind of pick up that mantle.
I think, if I may for just a brief second. So I posted something on Red Oceans, Blue Oceans, right? And I think your point with usability is interesting. I think, is it not being used because it's not a good thing, or is it not being used because it's an opportunity? And I'd like to say this is one of these Blue Oceans opportunity, right? And you're right. Magnum's ad was quiet. And, you know, I just remember my consulting days where we would spend hours brainstorming on, you know, how do you tap into... And I think that's deliberate because, Tim, you did it on the visuals, right? I know there's an audio podcast, but when you bite into that chocolate, you imagine, oh, are the pieces going to break and fall, you know, in my hand, you know? So I can almost visualize what happens when I am biting into a Magnum chocolate and it cracks, you know, so.
And the danger of where's that chocolate going to go, Walter?
Exactly.
5 second rule.
My mouth is going all in my mouth, but anyways.
The next topic that we have is, how is it that we should remember Skype, do you think? Now that the product's been sunset by Microsoft, many people are talking about Skype as a bit of a failure because the brand sort of dissipated in favor of Teams. And, you know, Microsoft very much showed favor towards that. But how do we think as a group here that we should remember Skype as an innovator, as a proprietor of video calls, or more as a loser of the pandemic?
So Josh, I want to jump in here, and actually I think because of the our two guests today, Tim and Walter, I actually position Skype as a change management failure. So Skype was bought by Microsoft for, what was it, $8.5 billion in 2011. That's a huge investment. However, Microsoft didn't integrate Skype. It didn't add on to like the kind of Microsoft ecosystem at the time. I think that there's a huge amount of positivity around Skype ways of working that then kind of permeated Microsoft. I think in some ways it was a successful purchase, but maybe a failed acquisition in the sense of they didn't integrate it into the Microsoft ecosystem. So there's no benefit. It stays the same product name, et cetera. And it's not been mentioned in any earnings calls since 2023. And that's, I think, their, I don't know if it's their biggest acquisition, but I mean, that's a huge amount of money. It reminds me a bit of BlackBerry. So personally, I feel a bit nostalgic. I remember being a very young consultant all around the world in weird places, very alone. And like, God, I would Skype friends and family. It was just such a godsend. I think we all have those memories of that blue screen, and that's really lovely. I don't see it as a innovator or like a loser from the pandemic. I think it was a, I mean, on a surface level, it seems like a bad acquisition, or potentially Microsoft buying a competitor, not improving it in order to focus all its effort on Teams. So I actually think it's maybe a bad change management.
Maxine, I really like, and like you, I did some research as well too, right? So I'm actually going to present a counter argument. I didn't think it was actually a failure from a change perspective. I think it was a strategic play. So here's my research. There's actually two acquisitions. Hopefully ChatGPT didn't lie, but eBay acquired Skype in 2005. Then an investor group acquired them in 2009. And then Microsoft acquired them in 2011. That's a lot of acquisitions. You know, yeah. If I put myself being in Skype, that's a lot of changes to go through. But here's the thing. Around that time, there was Google Talk, there was Apple FaceTime, and there was WhatsApp. Because when I saw the topic for this conversation, I was like, huh, where was WhatsApp? Because for me, my longing actually wasn't Skype. It was Vonage. I didn't look up to see when Vonage came out. And the video was helpful, but you know, just when you're talking to the older generation and computers and technology, sometimes you get into this interesting mix of can they use it? And for me, Vonage was just perfect for long distance conversations. But so just to close my loop and pass the popcorn over to Tim, I saw that as a strategic play, because Teams either didn't exist or wasn't really doing well. And I really saw that as a strategic play. Get some buzz around Microsoft, get some buzz around audio and video conferencing. And then, as they know, they shifted everything gradually over to Teams. And it made sense. Coming from tech, right, to me, I'm like, look, sunsetting is part of any corporate strategy, right? And so it had a purpose, it had a life, and then it moved on. Tim, I don't know what your thoughts are.
No, I mean, I also... resonate with what Maxine said about that Skype used to be a lifesaver in the noughties, and then especially in the noughties where we were traveling, or I mean I at the time had a long distance relationship, and I think it wouldn't work out if we hadn't had Skype at the time, right? So this is the really the thing, and also from a technology perspective, and if I'm not mistaken, Skype was the only point-to-point video call or chat system which was actually point-to-point and not via a server, which had a technology-wise a huge advantage, because you were not relying on two connections from your point to the server and then from the server to the endpoint. But really, from that perspective, I think it was hugely successful and hugely innovative and a differentiator from, and that's I think was why the quality was so good. And I could also imagine, yeah.
And free, not like and an free. Expensive long distance call.
That's also, I mean, if you want to call a landline, then you had to pay, but I think that was fair enough.
Well, maybe I just used the paid options, whoops.
And maybe that technology aspect was then difficult to integrate or it was not something desirable in today's world where you wanna make sure that you get all the private data from people, right? I mean, that's a little bit another aspect which might play into that. But one of the things it reminds me then on as well on why it's sunset, and I agree with everything Walter said as well, but also that puts me in a certain age bracket. So I started my career with developing Lotus Notes application. And I'm not sure who knows Lotus Notes. And not as an email system, but as an application development platform. And
to translate, Walter and Maxine put up their hands and smiled.
But I mean,
I just smiled and nodded.
So Lotus Notes at the time was the best application development platform, right? I mean, some people know and some people know it only as an email system. Yes, you could program an email system on that. That was an easy thing. I think if you start learning to develop on Lotus Notes, the first thing you do is you create an email application, see how you can actually do that. But the interesting thing, the big failure of Lotus Notes, and again, I think that's going back to what Walter said, it was a strategic thing. IBM bought it, and IBM didn't buy it because they want to have an application development platform. IBM bought it because Lotus Notes had a hugely modern and advanced database synchronization technology. And they just grabbed that underlying technology and integrated in whatever they were doing in IBM, and then ever since 2002, did not develop Lotus Notes as a system, as a platform, and for sure not the email system. And every company, I was still working on Lotus Notes in one company in 2015, like 13 years after the company decided not to strategically develop it anymore. So that's then goes a little bit along the line where maybe, I mean, I'm not technical savvy from that one, but maybe Microsoft took stride in a similar way that on the one hand, yes, we want to do some marketing around that. But on the other hand, maybe we extract some technology and build teams with that. And then, but we don't want to change Skype in the way that Teams look like today, because that's what we want to do. It was easier to build it from scratch.
We're going to lure into our next topic, which is MasterCard are partnering with Lightcard in the Middle East to create a new family banking proposition. And from that, so what is the future of family banking, and why do you think banks have found it so hard to get this right?
I think it's interesting that a born a digital startup are partnering with MasterCard. So that really helps them with MasterCard's rails, MasterCard's brand and trust. And I think if we think about, so they're launching a digital family proposition, you can do things like earn money. So it's the child can earn money through doing chores and things like that. So that concept I do think is interesting because it mirrors like an in-person, so that's a digital activity mirroring an in-person activity like earning chores and doing housework. And I do actually think that chore thing is quite important, only because there's a famous study that Harvard University did. It's one of their longest running studies. It's a 75-year study. I think it's called like the second generation study. But essentially it explores happiness, and it's taken children throughout their whole lives, and they can attribute children who were happiest and more successful were ones who had chores at home and activities where they were kind of a learning at home. So I do think this idea of digitizing pocket money and earning money through chores is interesting, because there is a correlation between kind of a chores and children's development. So I do think that that's kind of interesting.
Can I say something about that?
Oh, yeah, please do.
Because there's a lot of research then going about that you should not do if this, then that motivation. So I fully support that. And I've been growing up being involved in the household a lot. And that made me actually fulfilled and happy. But it should not be related to earning money. But yes, I mean, that's just a totally different research, which. Yeah. I mean, it's Daniel Pink with Drive, for example, going in that direction. So that's more that intrinsic motivation. But at the same time, I'm having a daughter and giving her pocket money, not for doing chores, but just giving her pocket money to learn how to deal with money. I think this is really good. And I think the one thing which popped up immediately in my mind when I heard the story of that family of that family banking thing is that it's almost like a disease, which is a lot of people talking about in the recent years, is that loneliness as a health issue, of a societal macroeconomic health issue. And I guess, Walter, you have done some systemic thinking about that as well. But this is something which is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think that is something we need to address. And that's why in the beginning I said I'm so into communities, because that's the counter thing, right? We need to embed ourselves into communities. We're making, having hobbies where we interact with people. That going away from that individualism and that loneliness and that aloneness, which is creeping in society. A friend recently told me in Singapore, I actually observe it that more and more people are eating alone. And Asia is all about eating with family, eating with friends. It's always very a social activity to eat. And that friend told me, I mean, she could really observe that more and more people are eating alone. And it's actually a very sad thing. So families is one of the societal cornerstones of a community, right? I mean, it's a kin-based community, but it's still a community. And I think this is, for me, exciting to see that also companies like MasterCard are getting engaged in that. And having been in the Middle East as well, I see that family is a very strong cornerstone of the society.
Yeah.
And this is really something which is fantastic to see, because in some of the Western worlds, you can observe that even family members are getting alone. I mean, everybody's doing their own stuff and not really, I mean, not Western world. I can see that in Singapore, that families sit on a dining table and everybody is doing their own social media feed and not talking to each other throughout the entire dinner. Mm. Not just at the beginning before they start eating, like while eating as well. I mean, it's going crazy, right? And I think banking could be one of the things which we say, okay, let's bring the family together again and let's bring them on one table and one face. And digital tools can help to have more in-person interaction. And I think we need to be aware of that as well. But then I'm sure Walter can talk about innovation and all of these aspects around that.
So Max, I was listening to you, right? And actually the thought that popped in my head was, I would have loved to be in the room when this idea was coming up, was sort of being brainstormed on, right? Because the finance part of the banker side of me says, what's the ROI, right? What's the motivation for doing this? Because the stuff that Leichhardt's doing is not unique. There's a lot of other companies out there where you reward your kids for doing chores. And having accounts for kids isn't unique either, right? So we're taking two non-unique things and joining them together. So then is the ROI based on longevity, meaning, oh, as a kid, this is what my parents use, this bank, so I'm going to continue using them, you know? So I took a step back, right? I do think there have been major shifts in banking. We went from traditional banks to online banking to mobile banking, and now we have this AI-driven banking. So now the question becomes, are banks now seeing a new opportunity with AI to try and drive, can we do more behavioralistic type things? And really, how do they integrate it, right? I think, I just want to mention, I don't know if any of you all have ever heard of the topic beginner's mind. It was something from Steve Jobs, right? And Mark Benioff talked about it as well. So I would say, if folks are approaching this, but not with a beginner's mind, they're not going to really tap into the ROI and ROV for this.
Mm.
But if they approach this from a beginner's mind perspective, don't just rely on your past successes and how you solve stuff, but instead approach it brand new, like a beginner, like a kid, and reimagine the ROI and ROV, I think then you can have something really powerful. And I don't think that's where they're going with it as yet. I think someone sat into a room, they're like, ooh, there's family, there's this. You could join these two things together, and then bam, we have an offering.
Mm.
But I think it can go even further deeper than that. So anyway, that's my two cents.
Typically what we do to wrap up the podcast is that we'll look for each of our panel's sort of cultural picks of the week. So that be it, you know, best music, best film that you've seen, best TV that you show that you've watched, design or books that you've seen, or just been inspired by. So I'd love to start with you, Tim.
Yeah, I mean, I have to talk about sci-fi books. I mean, first of all, I really, really have trouble to get excited about nonfiction books. I mean, recently somebody came, okay, or I have this a really, really cool book I read, and the person talked about the book and said, doesn't resonate, I'm not going to read it, sorry. So I have my four go-to sci-fi authors, and I mean, William Gibson, Neal Stephenson, Kim Stanley Robinson, Alistair Reynolds. So you can always look. I mean, all of their books are fantastic, but I want to give a special shout-out to Anathem from Neal Stephenson. So Anathem, it's such a mind-blogging book, which sometimes you don't really get the science anymore right on what are they actually talking about. But it also goes back to different types of communities and different types of societies embedded in current societies. I mean, all on a planet which we don't know about. And I just can recommend it if you want to get your mind stimulated and still learn something, even scientific. go ahead and read Anathem. I love that book. I read it twice, so that's actually why I just read it the second time after 10 years again recently. So a really cool book.
That's a shout if there ever was one. That's brilliant. Walter, what is it that you have for us this week?
You know, I've been on a track of really incorporating music into what I do, right? It goes back to the left and right hemisphere. And actually, there was a book I read, The Creative Brain, that throws apart the fact that there's no left or right hemisphere people. They actually use both. Anyway. Sorry, I went off on a tangent. Coming back, a new genre of music I've been listening to is one called Ampiano. And it's a, hopefully there's no purists that listen to this podcast because I may get attacked, but I see it as a version of Afro House. Anyway, what I like about it is it fits this interesting genre of when I need to do deep thought work, I'm like, it's my new default to until I find something else. Mm. But then also when I just want to jam out, it's also, you know, it kind of fits both interestingly enough. So big believer in, it's one of my taglines, right? Which is the art of inspiring people to action. And how do you do that? It's making sure you remember both the right and the left hemispheres of your brain. And how do I do that? I think I use music as a way when I'm doing my deep thought work. So that's my two cents for this week.
Awesome. Get you a genre that can do both. That's brilliant. Max, how about
for
you?
For me?
Well, it's very lowbrow, but I'm going to be honest with you. I've just discovered a TV show that's into its 12th season. And I've just started watching season 12 of Married at First Sight Australia. I have found it wildly entertaining. Firstly, like, it's got a very kind of a structured format. It's all new to me. I've never seen it before. I don't know what's going on. But the name is like exactly, the TV show is exactly as the name suggests. It's people who are matched up and they get married at first sight. And I'm just so entertained by it. And it's such a lesson in like human behavior and how some people just can't read the room. And I've just found it like really entertaining. And that's sometimes just what I need at the end of the day. Or in my case, a Saturday morning as well. It's quite joyful. So that's my pick. Normally I'm a bit of a culture vulture. I read a lot of books, but this really has been my highlight of the week, in truth. Like, very entertaining. And I just think self-awareness, not everybody has that gene.
Love it.
Honestly, watch it. It's completely wild. Like, especially if you don't want to watch something, like, if your brain needs time to switch off, but you're very awake, that type of vibe.
Well, that's a good place to leave it for now. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us today. That's great. And we hope that you're all caught up in the world of innovation this week. If you want to get access to label sessions for your brand or have your teams mentored by our leaders, you can get in touch via our website or any of our social networks, be it LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram, we're on everything. We used to be on Clapper, which was when TikTok was on the verge of being banned, but that wasn't necessary anymore.
Stop it, Josh.
See you guys next week.
Fantastic.